Welcome to this reading of the Business Record, Central Iowa's Business Weekly. I'm your reader, Bob Powers. All material heard on IRIS is intended for the use of listeners with print disabilities. And this week, we're reading from the September 13th, 2019 edition. And of course, we'll turn to the Insider Notebook. Bits and Bytes of the Finer Side of Iowa Business. Three stories by three authors. The Story Behind a New Waukee Event Center by Kathy A. Bolton. For Daniel and Rachel Pettit, finding space in which to host events for their charity, Trailhead International Builders, has been difficult. It's always been tough to get space, Daniel Pettit said recently during an interview with the Business Record. So while he was planning an office development west of Grand Prairie Parkway in Waukee, Pettit decided to include event space in one of the buildings. The space will be large enough to hold events for up to 500 people, he said. Trailhead International Builders will be among the groups using the space, Pettit said. Construction of the building is expected to begin this month, with completion slated in about 18 months. Trailhead International will move its offices, now in Ankeny, to the 88,000-square-foot Waukee facility as well, said Pettit, who, with Rachel, is co-president of the faith-based nonprofit. Trailhead International develops homes for homeless churches in developing countries. It also builds community centers, feeding centers for children, and adult literacy centers. Organized in 2015, the charity has completed 40 projects in 18 countries. My wife and I, years ago, talked about doing more things for kids, said Pettit, who is also planning a $101 million entertainment district in Waukee. Trailhead International Builders raises the money to pay for the projects, keeping overhead at a minimum, he said. We are doing a lot, and it's provided us with an opportunity to travel to a lot of neat places, he said. Current projects include construction of a church and literacy center in Kenya, a church in Cambodia, and a support center in Muscat, Oman. The events the organization hosts raise money for its construction projects, Pettit said. Roland Hagen, It's Never Just Business by Perry Beeman. Aaron Roland Hagen, founder and CEO of Entrepreneurial Technologies, has written a book, Soul Uprising, that includes the central message, It's Never Just Business. As Roland Hagen, a proud graduate of Ames High School and the University of Iowa, has said at rooftop receptions and quiet book signings, taking a hard line on business without considering the people involved is a mistake, in her view. Early in her book, she tells of instances where actions were taken for the sake of the bottom line, like delaying responses or deliveries, without regard to the frustration, business interruption, and other problems they caused. Quote, I've come to recognize that it's just business is often a cover for actions that go against the grain of the soul. Yet many, many people seem to view it this way, as if our moral compass was supposed to suddenly evaporate when we walked through the office door. Okay, that's fine, but that's other people. It doesn't have to affect me. I'm strong. I can continue to do things the way I know is right, can't I? The heart certainly wants to. Oh, does it want to? Yet each time our trust is broken, each time someone takes advantage or leaves us hanging, it's a blow to our dream of what our lives could be. Over time, as the hits keep coming, something starts to happen. We start to anticipate the blow before it arrives. We flinch and cover. We ever so subtly pull ourselves back to avoid the pain. Over the last 12 years, I've experienced many of those external struggles, battles with clients, haters, and even those close to me. I've questioned myself more times than I can count. I felt torn between what feels like the right thing to do, the thing I set out to do, and the endless waves of harsh reality that pummeled my optimism. Pummeled. Can I make it doing business in a way that feels right? Why are people so nasty? Can't things just fall into place? Why does business so often have to feel like war? End quote. Roland Hagen's book, available on Amazon, describes ways to avoid the war, and it's worth a read. Her company's core values are a hint of where she was headed. People matter. Trust matters. Honesty matters. Commitments matter. Respect matters. Special matters. And then Chris Konetsky's short little article here is entitled Judging Studs for Charity. I was recently invited to judge some studs for charity. Studs of wood, that is. Unfortunately, I couldn't attend the Greater Des Moines Habitat for Humanity event on August 29th, but we wanted to share the fun fundraising idea. The design competition held at Peace Tree Brewing was the culmination of the month-long Adopt a Stud campaign by 7 local ad and marketing agencies to sponsor and creatively design individual studs for the walls of a future home. Spinutech was named the winner by Judges Lance Henning, Greater Des Moines Habitat for Humanity Executive Director, and Joseph Jones, Executive Director of the Harkin Institute for Public Policy and Citizen Engagement. The participating agencies, Happy Medium, Lessing Flynn, Myox, Spinutech, Strategic America, Trilix, and Two Rivers Marketing will decorate the additional 40 sponsored studs to be placed in a home in late 2019 or early 2020. In total, the effort raised more than $4,000. And, in case you missed it, a brief look back at news from the past week on businessrecord.com. Public market. Greater Des Moines leaders are looking into turning the Des Moines Social Club into an all-year indoor public market. Sculpture Park. The John and Mary Papajohn Sculpture Park is 10 years old, and data shows many surrounding property values soared. Facebook. Altoona. Facebook has bought more land at its growing server farm in Altoona. Bank Iowa Buy. Bank Iowa plans to buy First State Bank of Colfax. IBC on Immigration. The Iowa Business Council called on Congress to expand and improve visa programs to help businesses hire workers. Next, let's turn to Closer Look. Meet a leader you should know. This week's subject, Amber Lynch. Executive Director, Invest DSM, Inc. by Kathy Bolton. Amber Lynch studied Spanish and anthropology as an undergraduate, majors that could be considered a leap from community planning. Lynch, though, would disagree. Quote, "You can learn so much about a society based on the places that they create," end quote, said Lynch, whose study of Spanish allowed her to travel abroad. Quote, "That was something that I learned through archaeology and cultural anthropology, but also traveling abroad and learning the history of different cities and how that history was written in the buildings and the street network and in other things," end quote. When she was deciding on a graduate program, she came across urban planning in an Iowa State University catalog. Quote, "The idea that I could participate in taking society's values and translating that into a place was really interesting to me. I just fell in love with it right away," end quote, Lynch said. Lynch's graduate studies led her to internships with the city of Des Moines and then to full-time employment with the city, first as an assistant planner and then senior planner. This summer, she was tapped to be executive director of Invest DSM, Inc., a nonprofit corporation that will oversee an expanded effort to revitalize the city's neighborhoods. she'll be paid $120,000 annually. The creation of Invest DSM is a departure from how Des Moines has tackled the problem of deteriorating neighborhoods. A study released a year ago showed that 22 of Des Moines' 52 neighborhoods had a higher percentage of slipping or bad houses than good or excellent ones. In addition, housing values in 30 neighborhoods failed to keep pace with inflation, the study showed. The city council selected 4 pilot areas: Beaverdale, Drake, Oak Park Highland Park, and McKinley School Columbus Park, in which to begin the concentrated effort of rejuvenating neighborhoods. This summer, the council approved the creation of the nonprofit, whose board includes 3 council members and 3 Polk County supervisors and private citizens. Among the board's and Lynch's responsibilities are deciding what revitalization programs to launch in each of the 4 neighborhoods and developing guidelines for those programs. Quote, "I think what is so amazing about Des Moines is people really care about this place. They care a lot about their neighborhoods. And at the end of the day, I want our organization to inspire people to love where they live and to show that they're proud of where they live, and to believe that the place they live is worth their investment of time, energy, and money," end quote, she said. We talked to Lynch about her journey and her new role with Invest DSM. How did you get interested in urban revitalization as a specialty? The city of Des Moines was really the only place in Iowa that was doing neighborhood revitalization consistently. One of their staff members came to a class at Iowa State University to present. When she was done, I asked if they had an internship for the summer. They didn't have any money to pay an intern. I said, "Well, I'd really like to learn about what you do. Can I volunteer part-time? I'll help you with projects. You can teach me what to do." That's what we did. That was the summer in between my 2 years of grad school. When I was getting close to graduation, they had a paid internship come up, and I did that, and it turned into a full-time position. And that was 10 years ago. What did you do as an intern? The 2 things that I did my first summer were working on updating the city's highly technical analysis of impediments to fair housing. That's a report that HUD requires. I updated that, and I also looked through all of the neighborhood associations' bylaws because they were trying to redo their policy around what was required for recognized neighborhoods. So I did all that grunt work to put together a report for the staff, but I got to know the neighborhoods really well. I got to know the people that were involved in all of the associations, at least by name. And I got to sit in on a lot of different things, too. It was a good introduction to the city. What did you do during your first years with the city? I got to assist on a couple of neighborhood plans right out of the gate, the Drake Neighborhood Plan and the Douglas Acres Neighborhood Plan, which gave me a really good sense of how Des Moines approached that kind of work. I helped do analysis work for those plans. I helped write the plans. I got to know the neighborhood stakeholders that were involved. We were in a staff situation where I could shadow people and really learn from the work that they were doing before I went and tried to do it all on my own. Talk a little bit about some of the other things you've done at the City of Des Moines. I helped create a partnership with Iowa State and their graduate planning studio class to do some neighborhood planning work for us that enabled us to do more. I got involved in Capitol Crossroads as well as staff support when we were doing the neighborhood improvement component of the Capitol Core work. I was getting a lot of leadership experience on projects. Why are neighborhoods important to a city, and why do they need it to be thriving? I think the tendency can be to put all the focus on a central business district. Neighborhoods are the lifeblood, in some ways, of a community because everybody who works in the community needs a place to sleep. They need a place to shop. They need a place to spend their time off, to find entertainment, and have time with family and do the rest of their life. And when neighborhoods aren't healthy, you start to lose the investment that people make in their community. If residents don't have the amenities available to them that they want, they're going to go find them somewhere else. Healthy neighborhoods help support a city. They make it function. What will you be doing and how will you help make these neighborhoods thrive? Our charge with Invest DSM is just that, to enable our neighborhoods to be healthy, vibrant, thriving places. We are in the position of being like an orchestra conductor where there are lots of players that need to be involved in order to make that neighborhood healthy. That includes everybody from the residents who live there now, to future home buyers or renters in that neighborhood, to realtors and developers, and so on. Our job is to pull all of those players together and help them see their role and how they can work together to accomplish this bigger vision of making a neighborhood healthy and vibrant. What are some of the tools you'll use to make neighborhoods healthy and vibrant? Some of our work is coordinating with partners who do what they do. So that's city departments who repave the roads and connect the sidewalks and put playground equipment in the parks. We are fortunate that the city and county both believe in this endeavor and have put a pretty substantial amount of funding behind that belief. We get to invest that funding in helping individual homeowners make upgrades to their homes, help developers bring new housing into the neighborhood, help a commercial property owner renovate their property. We'll get to really enable some of the things that the private market isn't doing on its own right now. We really need to think about these houses and commercial properties as part of the city's infrastructure. Yes, it's privately owned, and the owner has a responsibility for maintaining that structure. But when they move on from that house or that business, the building will still be there, and we want to make sure that it's an attractive building for whoever owns it next. Unfortunately, there's a lot of blocks where people haven't kept up with the maintenance over the years. We think it's worthwhile to help those property owners overcome some of that deferred maintenance and get their house or commercial property in good shape and make sure that it is a great place for them to live and it's marketable into the future. What do you do when you're not doing community planning? My husband, Ryan, and I try and soak up as much time as we can with our two daughters. We also spend a lot of time with friends. My in-laws are all here and family. We try and get outside as much as possible. And here's the sidebar for Ms. Lynch. Amber Lynch, age 38, lives in Des Moines. Family, husband Ryan and daughters, Nora, 6, and Haley, 3. Education, bachelor's degree, Spanish and anthropology, Luther College, 2003. Master's degree, Community and Regional Planning, Iowa State University, 2009. Activities, spending time with family. Contact amlynch at dmgov.org. And now I'll spell that. Capital A, capital M, capital L, and then the rest is small letters. LYNCH at the at sign dmgov.org. AMLynch at dmgov.org. Let's turn now to the opinion section, and we'll start with Drew McClellan at marketing. Don't lose what you've built. There's been a lot of publicity and talk around GDPR, privacy concerns, data breaches, and other risks to our businesses that are sneaking through the marketing door. These are getting all of the media attention, but the truth of it is, marketing has always been a weak spot in terms of an organization's legal protections. Whether you're a part of an in-house marketing department, the business owner, or an agency, we are often not protecting the assets we worked so hard to produce. Here are some of the common mistakes we make and how to fix them before you end up in court, in a lawsuit, or just out of luck. Document copyright and IP ownership. When a person creates something tangible, whether it's a series of words, a logo, a piece of art, or an audio or video file, that person owns the copyright to that creation. If the creator is your W-2 employee, then the organization owns the copyright. But if the creator is a freelancer, even though you contracted and paid them to create the work, technically, they still own the piece. Which means they can come back to you and ask for more money or prevent you from using it. In every contract you have with a freelancer or other outside vendor, be sure to stipulate that once you have paid them the contracted amount of money, then your organization holds the copyright to the work. Is it really new? You also want a guarantee of original work in your contracts with freelancers or other third-party producers. Beyond that, they need to have insurance in place in case it turns out they violated that agreement. We've had companies come to us in a panic because they hired someone else to create a logo, only to discover the freelancer stole it from a design site online. In one instance, the brand was 3 days away from a full rebrand launch, with outdoor boards, signage on their buildings, all new truck wraps, etc. We had to help them negotiate with the originator of the work for the ability to license the logo. The actual designer of the work lived in a different country and had them completely over a barrel. Fortunately, the designer was empathetic and his ask was reasonable, but this company would have had to pay whatever he demanded. Verify and own any vital trademarks. Every organization creates assets that are going to play a huge role in how we market the company. We may come up with a tagline or hire someone to create a new logo for our company. Or we decide to rename our organization, a product, or service. Unbelievably, the URL is available, so we grab it and prepare for our launch. I can't tell you how many companies find themselves in hot water at this stage. If you don't properly trademark that name, tagline, or logo, you could find yourself in a legal pickle. You must do your due diligence to see if the name, phrase, or mark is actually available for use. And if it is, you need to protect your right to use it by filing for a trademark. Just because a URL is available does not mean there isn't a trademark. You can start your search on your own through the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office's Trademark Electronic Search System. TESS is the acronym. But from there, you need an attorney who specializes in intellectual property law. Fortunately, there are several excellent options here in Central Iowa. All of these modern-day realities are much too important to ignore. The money it will cost you to do it properly now is insignificant to what it will cost you to either litigate usage or, worse, have to start from scratch again. Next come the Elbert Files, A Wobbly Stock Market by Dave Elbert. The Dow. September is historically a volatile month for investors, but it's hard to imagine it being worse than August this year. Last month, the Dow Jones Industrial Average posted several triple-digit direction changes, beginning with a loss of 1,504 points. 5.5% between July 29th and August 5th, followed by what traders called a dead cat bounce, up 661 points, down 482, back up 383, then down 800 points on August 14th. During the last half of the month, things were marginally quieter. The Dow climbed 656 points, dropped 173, regained 290, and fell 624 points on August 23rd. The final week, the Dow pushed up 775 points to close 461 points below its July finish. It was a rough road, but at the end of August, the Dow was up 2970 points, 12.7% for the year. Iowa companies. The market performance of Iowa's 17 largest publicly traded companies has been all over the map in 2019, with 8 posting gains through August and 9 showing losses. The two biggest gainers were Ankeny-based Casey's General Stores and WorkIva, the Ames startup that provides data-crunching tools to large businesses. On August 30th, Casey's shares closed at just 167.85, up 31.6% for the year. WorkIva closed at $48.11, up 31.2%. Casey's benefited from a $20 boost in June following a better-than-expected earnings report. WorkIva shares climbed steadily during the first half of 2019. The technology company received an $8 boost from a favorable earnings report in early August, but was unable to maintain the gain in the volatile market. Shares of Des Moines-based insurer Principal Financial Group, Iowa's largest public company, began the year at $44.39, topped $60 in late July, and ended August at $52.66, a 19.9% gain for the year. Shares of 3 other Iowa insurers were all down by double digits at the end of August. West Des Moines-based American Equity Investment Life Holding Company saw its shares fall 25.9% during the 8 months, while shares of FBL Financial Group, also based in West Des Moines, fell 19.8%, and Cedar Rapids-based United Fire Group was down 16.9% for the year. We break here to tell you that you are listening to this week's edition of the Business Record. Our thanks to the folks at Business Publications for providing a copy of the Business Record to Iris so that we can read it for you. If you have any comments on this or any other Iris program, give us a call at 243-6833. That's 243-6833. Now, back to the Business Record. And we resume with Dave Elbert's column this week called A Wobbly Stock Market. And we left off with holding companies. 4 Iowa banking companies posted varying results for the 8 months. Shares of Iowa City-based Midwest One Financial Group rose 15.1%. West Des Moines-based West Bank gained 7.3%, Ames National Corp. climbed 3.9%, and Dubuque-based Heartland Financial lost 2%. Results for 3 Iowa manufacturing companies varied widely. Forest City's motorhome manufacturer Winnebago Industries began the year at $24.97, climbed to $40.30 in late July, and ended August at $32.02, a 28.2% gain for the year. Muscatine-based office manufacturer HNI Corp. began the year at $36.15 and climbed to $41.80 in February, before sliding the next 6 months to end August at $31.19, down 13.7% 5% for the year. Furniture manufacturer Flex Steel Industries of Dubuque, which is undergoing a restructuring, saw a decline in its share price from $24.17 at the beginning of the year to $15.14 at the end of August. Shares of AIM-based biodiesel maker Renewable Energy Group also saw a steady erosion from January through August, falling from $26.07 to $12.17. Iowa's two media companies also lost ground. Des Moines-based magazine and broadcast owner Meredith Corp. lost 15.6% during the 8 months, while Davenport newspaper publisher Lee Enterprises dropped 19.1%. Finally, shares of Heartland Express, the North Liberty Trucking Company, hit several bumps but pushed on. The company began 2019 at $18.49 a share, climbed to $21.14 in February, drifted back to $17.38 in June, and finally ended August at $20.57, up 11.3% for the 8 months. And next we turn to the cover story. This week it's by Joe Gardiaz, and the title is Making the Leap to Direct Primary Care. Subtitle, Exemplar Care Embraces Practice Model as More Patient-Centric. In a typical primary care physician practice, it's not uncommon for health insurance and other overhead expenses to swallow the majority of every dollar spent on care. An alternative practice model known as direct primary care, however, puts the majority spent in the practice back into patient care, says Dr. John Van Der Veer. And I'll spell that. John is J-O-N. Van is capital, of course, V-A-N. Der is capital D-E-R. And Veer is capital V-E-E-R. I'll be pronouncing it John Van Der Veer, but I wanted you to know how to spell it. In January, Van Der Veer opened Exemplar Care in West Des Moines. His goal is to build a direct primary care practice that will serve several hundred self-paying individuals as well as group members of a number of small businesses. Under the model, which is often referred to as a cousin of concierge care, patients pay a flat fee for unlimited visits and access to the doctor, and also pay the doctor directly for any medical procedures, labs, and prescriptions at prices negotiated by the physician. In contrast with most concierge care models, however, direct primary care practices and their patients don't file any claims with health insurance companies. Quote, this is trying to get health care back to where it was 40 years ago when patients paid their doctor directly. So this isn't a new model, it's a recycled model, he said. The negotiated lab, procedure, and drug rates that Van Der Veer passes along to his patients are typically the same rates that Medicaid would pay. For instance, an MRI with contrast might have a list price of $1,900, but Van Der Veer is able to pass on his negotiated rate of $348. He posts all of his rates, which he said are negotiable, on his website as well. Exemplar doesn't yet make referrals to specialists, but Van Der Veer said he plans to do that in the future. A national network of direct primary care clinics, MDVIP, all caps, no spaces, no periods, has also attracted two greater Des Moines physicians, Dr. Fred Marsh in Ankeny, and Dr. Jeffrey Lenz, L-E-N-Z, in West Des Moines, who each have established independent MDVIP affiliated practices. Marsh opened the first MDVIP clinic in Iowa in April 2018. Quote, "As a third-generation family physician, I've witnessed the erosion of the doctor-patient relationship in traditional high-volume primary care practices," Marsh said in a news release when he launched the practice. Quote, "With a smaller practice, I have more time to partner closely with my patients on setting goals and creating a customized wellness plan that guides them to a healthier, more active lifestyle," end quote. Based in Boca Raton, Florida, MDVIP has approximately 950 physicians across the country who offer a direct primary care practice, cumulatively serving more than 300,000 patients, according to the company's website. Both Marsh and Lanz declined to be interviewed for the article. According to the Direct Primary Care Coalition, an advocacy group, 27 states have enacted laws setting guidelines for direct primary care practices. Iowa's law was enacted last year with passage of House File 2356. Among the requirements of that legislation is that direct primary care physicians are required to inform patients in writing that the fees do not cover major procedures or illnesses, and that patients should have at least a high deductible health insurance plan. "It's a very different way of thinking about health insurance," Vandeveer said. Quote, "If you think of health coverage as more comparable to auto insurance, your auto insurance doesn't pay for your oil changes or tire rotations. It covers the big expenses if you have an accident," he said. Direct primary care practices, such as Exemplar, are able to negotiate competitive rates because rather than using insurance, each physician is on the hook for the procedure or medicine cost, which the physician then collects from the patient. "So part of it is me saying, I'm backing this through my practice," Vandeveer said. "Actually, I didn't expect that good of a deal, and when I got it, I was pretty darn happy," end quote. He dispenses medications directly from his clinic rather than through a pharmacy. A common antidepressant, Lexapro, for instance, has a price list of $11 per tablet, but he gets it at 4 cents per tablet, the cost of which he passes on to his patients. Vandeveer was formerly the regional medical officer for CareMore Health's Iowa operation, which treated Medicaid patients as a sister company of Amerigroup. Before that, he was vice president of medical affairs for Greene County Medical Center in Jefferson. He started his career as an internist with Unity Point Health. "Part of my work with CareMore was researching different kinds of care models, and in doing so, I stumbled upon the direct patient care model," he said. He has patterned his practice on one operated by Atlas MD in Wichita, Kansas, which provides a startup bundle that includes an electronic health record system. The electronic health record is the only part of it they charge for, Vandeveer said. "It's just their belief that it's a different, more patient-centric way to practice medicine. They know that it's not a panacea that fixes everything, but for a lot of what ails health care, it's a step in the right direction," Vandeveer said. His initial goal was to sign on 15 patients in his first year, and he actually reached 30 patients in his first 5 months. But he's also negotiating with various employers that could boost his patient count to several hundred very quickly. His corporate rate is $50 per month per member, and employers can opt whether they want to pay their employees' costs for lab fees and medications. Quote, the neat thing about the way the legislation is set up is that they set up the billing for their employees, but then they step out of the way and it's back to just the patient and the physician, he said. I think having such a tight labor market, people are curious whether there are some benefits to be gained by not having to have discussions about copays and get some of that stuff cut. As a physician, Vanderveer has found that the additional time he is able to spend with each of his patients enables him to be a better advocate for their health. For instance, he saw a patient who had what appeared to be carpal tunnel syndrome in his wrist, but to be safe, he suggested to the patient that he get a nerve conduction study through a neurologist to make sure it wasn't a more serious condition. That led to Vanderveer seeking an MRI of his spine, which showed the patient had a huge herniated disc that needed immediate surgery. If I hadn't pushed to get this done, he might not have gotten this serious condition taken care of until 3 weeks later, which could have resulted in paralysis, he said. Could more patients bring too many administrative duties and crowd out time for patients? Quote, that's why I set my goal for between 500 and 800 patients, he said. Let's say I hit 400 patients and it's not sustainable. Then I could bring on an administrative assistant. Right now I do my own blood draws, but at some point in the future, I hope to bring on a nurse or CNA to do some of that stuff. They're just better at it than I am, end quote. He's found that patients are often as enthusiastic about direct primary care as he is. Quote, if we talk about diet and exercise at your visit, I can actually put a note on the electronic health record to ping you in a week to see how it's going. And so I can build in some of these follow-ups real time and have some real conversations and be texting back and forth about stuff. That's been really neat. And it looks like some pretty interesting sidebars for this article, so let's get started, shall we? Des Moines physicians' opinions mixed on direct primary care. The Polk County Medical Society sent a short survey to its members at the request of the Business Record to gauge local doctors' attitudes about direct primary care practices. 15 physicians responded, representing about 7% of its members. One-third of the physicians responding, 5, said it's a type of practice they would consider moving to if they were able. However, 10 of the doctors said it was unlikely or very unlikely they would shift to a direct primary care practice in the near future. When asked how familiar they were with direct primary care on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the most familiar, the responses averaged a 5.5. One physician indicated the possibility of launching a direct primary care practice in the next 2 years as, quote, likely, end quote. Several doctors commented that there were too many unknowns for them to be comfortable with direct primary care, while others said they preferred their current practices. One physician said it's too narrow of an approach to be an effective solution. Quote, this provides care for those that can afford the monthly fee for special attention. In my opinion, it does nothing for the bigger issue of providing high-quality primary care for all people, wrote that physician. Mercy One plans direct primary care clinic as employee benefit. Mercy One is developing a direct primary care clinic benefit that it hopes to roll out for its employees within the next 2 years. If it proves successful with its own employees, the clinic could potentially be offered to Greater Des Moines employers as well. We're just trying to test the waters, said Dr. Tim McCoy, chair of primary care for Mercy One and a physician at the South Des Moines Clinic. Quote, we have 10,000 employees. Some of them already have a dock and wouldn't want to be seen by someone else. Others are outside the area. It's a challenge for us strategically to figure out how much we want to invest in it, end quote. Neither Unity Point Health nor Iowa Clinic has any plans for direct primary clinics, representatives from those organizations said. Mercy One's parent organization, Catholic Health Initiatives, operates a direct primary care clinic for its employees in Omaha, and McCoy has looked to that model as a guide in developing Mercy One's DPC clinic. CHI's Omaha clinic served more than 1,000 employees last year and now has two physicians on staff. Mercy One's DPC clinic in Des Moines would probably begin with one physician, McCoy said. As for the number of employees who may use it, I don't think we have a number in mind. We are thinking of offering it and see how many people want it. If it proves successful, he says, I would think the next step might be to offer it to other employers, which I think Omaha is doing now, McCoy said. The intent now would be to offer it to the employee population and see about interest from other employers. And finally, a tiny sidebar for Exemplar Care PLC. Website is http://exemplar, I'll spell that, EXEMP as in Paula, LAR, .care, /. Phone is 515-500-2136. I'll repeat that, 515-500-2136. And the address is 4949 Westtown Parkway, Suite 100, West Des Moines, Iowa, 50266. And let's finish up with the CRE update by Kathy Bolton, as much of it as we can get in. The push to raise $5.5 million. If Mainframe Studios is able to lease another floor of Artist Studios, it will become financially self-sustaining. But first, money is needed to pay for renovations. Supporters of Mainframe Studios are making an ambitious push to raise $5.5 million in the next 2 years to pay for the completion of renovations in the building that houses affordable workspaces for artists and low-cost office space for nonprofit arts groups. Since the inception of the project 5 years ago, about $8.8 million has been raised to pay for renovations and other expenses. The three already renovated floors at Mainframe Studios, which opened in late 2017 at 900 Keosauqua Way, are filled and there is a waiting list of more than 100 artists who have paid a deposit for future studios. Currently, 89 tenants lease 71 studios of varying sizes. When fully built out, Mainframe will house 181 studios. Plans call for renovations of a fourth floor to begin by November and be completed by next summer. Renovations of the fifth and final floor would begin in late 2020 or early 2021. Mainframe will be financially self-sustaining once construction of a fourth floor is completed and fully leased, supporters of the nonprofit say. Mainframe Studios currently has an annual deficit of nearly $165,000, according to its published operating budget. With another fully leased floor, Mainframe will generate nearly $670,000 in revenue. enough money to cover all expenses and still have $24,000 left for a reserve fund. At full capacity, with 181 studios leased, Mainframe will generate more than $890,000 in revenue, as well as have $75,000 in reserves and $110,000 for an endowment for artists, a cash flow analysis shows. Once this is fully complete, it's going to be even more special than it is now, said Justin Mandelbaum, a local real estate developer and founder and board president of Mainframe Studios. Our goal is for our open studio events, First Fridays, to be as widely known as the farmer's market, essentially a farmer's market of art, where people come in and there's always something new to see. Mandelbaum was involved with a similar project in the Boston area when he lived on the East Coast. There, he helped renovate a brick warehouse into about 250 studios for artists. By the time it opened, it was full, said Mandelbaum, who eventually sold his interest in the project, which is still operating today. When he returned to Des Moines, he thought a similar concept would be feasible, but only if he could find a way to provide affordable studios to artists while also making the project viable financially. He opted to operate the project as a nonprofit rather than traditional for-profit business. Mandelbaum also found a ready-made market for the project. Art 316, a building with studios on Southwest 5th Avenue, south of Martin Luther King Parkway, had closed, leaving more than 20 artists without workspaces after the building's owners decided in 2015 to convert the former warehouse into lofts. And here's a little sidebar. History of 900 Kiowa Building. The five-story concrete block building at 900 Keosauqua Way was designed by Des Moines architect Charles Chick Herbert, whose credits include the Des Moines Civic Center and Iowa State University's College of Design. The building, which opened in 1983, housed Northwestern Bell Company's data center for about 10 years, and then became a call center for Quest and later for CenturyLink. In January 2011, a fire broke out on the building's fourth floor, causing significant smoke and water damage. At the time of the fire, about 250 people worked in the building. Developer Justin Mandelbaum, through Des Moines Arts, Inc., bought the building and other adjacent properties in late 2014 for $2 million, Polk County records show. One of the parcels was sold to Quick Trip Corp., and money from the sale was used to help pay for renovations of three floors at Mainframe Studios. You've been listening to the Business Record on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. I'm your reader, Bob Powers. Thanks for sharing your time with IRIS. Thank you.
Roxanne Watson is on a mission.
Hello, how are you doing today?
She wants more people to register as organ, eye, and tissue donors.
Are you an organ donor?
Yes, I am.
Yay! Alrighty.
My goal is to sign up the most people in the United States.
What drives her? Roxanne's own life was saved through the gift of a heart transplant, made possible by an organ donor.
I decided that day that I was going to devote myself to the cause of organ donation and signing people up and honoring my donor by doing that.
Now she's back to health, and she's a powerful force helping to save lives every day through her work. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life.
8 people can be helped with the major organs, and up to 50 people can be helped with a little bit of everything. And when you think about it that way, that you could help that many people, it's amazing, it really is.
Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.